Come to the 64th annual OA birthday party. Together, we get better. In person, January 12th through 14th at the LAX Hilton in Los Angeles, California. Meet fellows from across the globe for a weekend-long extravaganza of workshops, panels, special interest speakers, entertainment, fellowship, laughs, and recovery. Highlights include body image workshop, weekend-long big book study, sober eating workshop, keynote speakers with unique stories, dance party and comedy show, yoga and meditation, meetings and meetups for LGBTQIA, BIPOC, Spanish language, young people, and AAPI members, plus a boutique where you can shop till you drop. Registration is now open at oabirthday.com. Staying the night? Book your room now at a discounted rate through the oabirthday.com website and act fast because rooms sell out quickly. There is a solution. You'll hear from speakers who have various versions of this disease who live happy, joyous, and free. Because together, we get better.
Welcome to the old school meeting of Overeaters Anonymous, featuring speakers with long-term abstinence. This meeting was born online, and it's going to stay that way. That means you can attend live on Tuesday evenings at 6:30 Pacific. And now, our speaker.
My name is Joe, and I am a compulsive overeater. I'd like to first of all show you some photographs, if I may. People always find them interesting. This was me at the age of 13. I was fairly thin, as you can see. I never had a problem with weight until some things happened right around the age of 13. I was a pretty snappy dresser. I was the one on the left. If you notice the shoes, black and white, that was the trend, and I had to have them. And then 3 years later, this was me. And I gained somewhere between 250 pounds. And I maintained that weight through just before I came into Overeaters Anonymous. This is me with my dad when I graduated from college at 30. And, you know, if you stay around the program long enough, you may end up like this, which was my 20th sober birthday. And it was me at a Halloween costume party. And I'll end with this picture and a picture of Roseanne at her house. And this is where Overeaters Anonymous started. I always like to start when I'm talking and telling my story in February of 1983. I had just bought a building with two people who were in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was at the lowest point in my life. I wanted to just die on a daily basis. And I would wake up every morning, you know, sort of that time when you're half awake and you're half asleep. And I would do one of two things. I would either say the Lord's Prayer, which was unusual because I was an atheist by that time, or I would think about getting the gun out of the drawer next to the bed and killing myself. After about 2 weeks after I bought the building, I think that the two people that brought me into the program, they knew they had three choices. One was to sell the building at a great economic loss. Two was to drink again after 6 years of sobriety, or three to get me into a 12-step program. And so they started 12-stepping me into Overeaters Anonymous. I just didn't think it would work. I had never been able to lose weight without the use of drugs. I started when I was about 17 or 18. A doctor gave me little black and white pills called black and white mollies, you know, and he was a friend. So he said, if you need more than 30, just let me know. And, you know, if one is good, three is better. And I loved them because they made me real active and I wasn't hungry and I lost a lot of weight. And then I started to gain it all back. And my last diet before I came into Overeaters Anonymous was in 1978. I was about 272 pounds, not my top weight. My top weight was somewhere around 325, 350. I don't know if you can identify with this, but I didn't weigh when I was that high of a weight. I do remember something like a 56 to 58 inch waist. My diet consisted of a bowl of vegetable soup and a glass of iced tea for lunch. And then I had I had it at the same restaurant every day. They saw me get out of the car, I would come in and they would have it waiting for me on the table. And then I would have a very heavy dinner of 35 to 50 milligrams of Valium dropped in 3 or 4 scotches. And that was all that I had for 9 months. And I went down to 141 pounds. And one of the people I worked with said I had a complete psyche change but not the kind that the doctor talked about in the big book, in the doctor's opinion. In February of 1983, I was not a very nice person. I was really an asshole. And, you know, I treated people badly. And then I would turn around and treat them nicely to try to get what I wanted. I could come into a room, find your weak parts, sort of stab you in the back, pull the knife out, and laugh and leave the room laughing. You would not have liked me. They started to 12-step me into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous. And there was a Friday night meeting that they went to at St. Philip's Church. And it was across the hall. They had a meeting called OA for the Chemically Dependent. And I just didn't think it would work for me because I needed drugs to lose weight. But in May of 1983, on a Saturday, I was driving along about 70 miles an hour on a freeway, Memorial. And I was probably drinking a large Coke and drinking a couple of eating a couple of candy bars. And I was once again going to do something that I didn't want to do because I couldn't say no. And there was a car parked on the freeway, and I hit the car at between 60 and 70 miles an hour. And I said for several years that I couldn't pull over because the highway was full. It wasn't any cars. I think at that moment, I was so down, so depressed that I just wanted to die. And I think it was a suicide attempt. And I walked away from it with nothing but a bruise on my stomach. And I went to the doctor on Monday, and he examined me and said, I'd had an examination about a month before. And he said, you know, I told you needed to lose weight. The reason that you weren't hurt is because you're so fat. And I said to him, I've been thinking about going to Overeaters Anonymous. I think that that was the moment in which I took the first step. It was when I knew, and I didn't even know anything about the 12 steps, but I knew that I was powerless over food and I needed something to help me to get through life at this point rather than to die. I went back. I told them, the two people, Beverly and Wayne, that I wanted to go to a meeting on Friday night. They took me to the meeting on Friday night before it was Memorial Day weekend, 1983. And I sat in the back of the room, of course, and they sat on either side of me, I think to kind of drag me back to the chair if I tried to get out of the chair. And I heard some things in that meeting that were to change my life. And I especially heard one guy tell his story because it was birthday night. It was a guy named Terrell who later moved to California. And he told my story. And I think that's one of the reasons I stuck around for so long. And, you know, I heard that there was a solution to the way that I felt on the inside. And I also heard that you're only as sick as your secrets and that you fake it till you make it and that you eat three meals a day, nothing in between, and you don't eat sugar, moderate meals. And so I went home that night. I read a couple of the pamphlets that they gave me. And the next morning, I met with the two people that brought me to the meeting, and I had some questions for them. You know, do I need to go to more than one meeting a week? And they said, it's probably a good idea. And I said, are you sure that this is not a cult like the Moonies? Because there seemed to be a lot of chanting and praying in that meeting. And, you know, I wasn't sure that I could stick around because I wasn't sure that I could remember that prayer that they said at the beginning of the meeting because it was so long and complicated. You know, the Serenity Prayer, but that's where I was at. It was Memorial Day weekend. There was a big family reunion, and I went to the family reunion on Memorial Day weekend of 1983. Probably not the best idea to start your abstinence. And I made the mistake of telling him I was on a diet. So all weekend I heard, Joe, can we make you something special? Joe, we can't make ice cream. Joe can't eat ice cream. And I heard all of this all weekend long from my family. And on Monday, when I left that family reunion, I had had three moderate meals, nothing in between, and nothing with sugar. And I've been abstinent on that plan of eating since Memorial Day weekend of 1983. I think that when that Monday, I took the second step because I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And for me, that power was Overeaters Anonymous. And, you know, I just realized that it was just amazing to me that I had done that. And I started going to meetings, regular meetings. I ended up, for the first probably 20 years, I did 8 meetings a week. But, you know, I knew that one of the things that I had to do was I had to really take the third step. And I had heard that you're only as sick as your secrets. And I knew that I needed to tell Beverly and Wayne my deepest, darkest secret. And so one day I decided about a month and a half after I came into the program, I decided I had to tell him. So I was going to tell him over lunch. It's amazing how many things I did over lunch and dinner and breakfast. But anyway, we went to lunch and I just couldn't do it. And we were coming back and talking about buying the building. And I said, I almost didn't buy the building. And Beverly said, why not? And I said, because I'm gay. And Beverly turned to me and said, we know, we still love you. And I think that that was when I took the third step. That was when I was willing to trust a God of my understanding so that no matter what happened, no matter what they said, no matter what they did, and they were the two most important people in my life at that point, because I had lived in Houston for 7.5 years and knew only 3 people. And so, you know, I took the third step because I really was saying, you know, God, whatever happens, I'm going to be okay. I got a sponsor right away, Jeff F., and I picked him because he was the thinnest person in the room, and that's what I wanted, you know. And so I wanted to start working a 4th step right away, and he said, oh, no, you need to wait. I said, no, I need to get a 4th step started. So I carried a little notebook with me, and I traveled a lot, about 3 weeks a month all over the country, and I'd write down a name, and then I'd get so pissed that I couldn't do anything but put it away and wait till the next day and write some more. It took me about 4 months to do my first 4th step, and I got sober in October of 1983, and so I gave it away to someone, not my OA sponsor, but an AA person who was a spiritual guru, and he had a lot of good things to say, especially about me being molested by my uncle and some emotional sexual abuse by my grandmother and some other sexual abuse and incest, and I really came away from that on a high. And I had been molested as an 11-year-old kid. And so, you know, I really felt great and everything was wonderful. I mean, the 5th step worked. The problem was 2 months later, that man went out and molested an 11-year-old boy. And the anger that came up for me was so great that I came close to both eating and drinking. Instead, what I did was I immersed myself in the program. I talked about what was going on. I did another 4th step and gave it away to my sponsor. I worked the steps on that man, and I released the anger. It also taught me that the sickest people in the world are in these rooms, and not all of them are in recovery. So I need to be very, very careful and realize also that, you know, if I trust in God, I don't have to worry about anything else. And I have to take care, you know, and I came away from that second 4th step again, feeling really great, really high. And I decided, you know, and then I decided to go to step 6 and 7. I think steps 6 and 7, and I'll probably talk a lot about those 2 steps, are for me the heart of the program. You know, there's only 2 small paragraphs in the big book on step 6 and 7. But for me, what they are they're the heart of the program, because they are what allows me to have relationships. When I came into the program, I had lived a closeted life. I never let any one person know who I was. I had so many different faces and so many different personas with so many different people. Nobody knew who Joe was. I didn't even know who Joe was. And so what it was I had to learn how to socially interact with other people. I was lucky when I came in, the meetings were about 120 people at St. Philip's, and we'd all go out to eat afterwards. And, you know, I had to learn how to socialize with people. I had to learn how to talk to somebody that I didn't know. I had to, you know, communicate. I had to learn how to call people. And so what step 6 and 7 has done for me is they have allowed me to work on my relationships. step six for me is not doing the things that I want to do. Not doing the things that I want to do. Step seven is doing the things that I don't want to do. And what that is in relationships, as I said, I was a real asshole before program. So what I had to learn how to do was not be an asshole. I had to learn how to not use cutting humor in order to make myself feel better. I had to learn how to listen. And, you know, that's really an important thing, is just learning how to listen. If nothing else, step six and seven gave me that. Today, I have relationships basically all over the world. One I would like to talk about is my assistant. She has been with me for 25 years. She knows everything about me. I know everything about her. And what I've learned how to do, she has an addict brother who's not in recovery, and she has a raging Al-Anon mother. And when she comes in the morning, on a Monday morning after being home for the weekend, we talk for a while. And she starts to talk about her weekend and her family. And I just listen. I don't say anything. I don't offer any advice. I just listen. Today she was talking about something. I just listen. And that's the way that I do my relationships today.
3 minutes.
What I try to do is I try to not create a hostile atmosphere around me. I'm very politically narrow-minded. When certain people start talking about certain things, I do what two people said in AA that I heard. One said to the other, you know, no matter what anybody says, I just say, you're right. The other guy says, no, you need to speak up. You need to tell the truth. You need to really speak your piece. And the guy looked at him and said, you know something? You're right. And that's what I try to do today, is I try to just not create discourse within my life. I have a God of my understanding today. It's a loving, caring God of my childhood that I had when I actually wanted to be a minister. And so, you know, I lost that when the whole gay thing and the incest and the sexual abuse came up. And so what today I try to do is I try to have relationships. I try to expand my horizons. I had Tuesday night, I have sculpture class. I'm an artist. And I left my sculpture class early to come to this meeting because I'm expanding who I am as a person. I'm 79 years old. I still work 12, 14 hour days. I still go to sculpture class. I still do all of these things. And I don't think any of it would be possible if I weren't abstinent and following a plan of eating in Overeaters Anonymous. That is what is the most important thing in my life, is to be abstinent. And also, as Roseanne used to say when I was on the Board of Trustees to me, is no matter what, just keep coming back. No matter what, just keep coming back. I like to always end with this. In AA, they say, even if your ass is falling off, don't drink. I like to say, even if your ass is falling off, don't overeat. And if you don't overeat, more than likely your ass will fall off. Thank you very much.